Hey yo, this is Dave from thenewyorkbudget.com. Texarkana, where you at? Joe plays board games all the time. OG still works the daily grind. Roundtable views don't always align, but help financial peace of mind. Suzanne's HR skills for the win. Doug is in mom's cookie tin. PK's attacking Jim again. All on Stacking Benjamins. Stack, stack, stack. Stacking Benjamins. Stack, 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 stack. Stacking Benjamins. Kicking it all the way from the 212 to the 903-430.
Live from Joe's mom's basement, it's the Stacking Benjamin Show. I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug, and man, do I love Mondays. The smell of bacon and Febreze in the basement, Joe's mom bacon cookies, and today we're featuring from the Young Yet Wise blog, a woman who will tell us the story of paying off over $40,000 of debt while struggling with her income, Candace Marie. Plus, in headlines, will the stock market have an amazing year? At least one news piece says it's time to be bullish. And we'll throw the Haven Lifeline to a lucky listener, answer some of my fan mail. Man, do I get buckets of fan mail. And still deliver a fresh shovel of my trivia. And now, two guys who love their Monday, Joe and OJJJJG.
I'm not sure what he's talking about.
Shovel a whole bunch of baloney?
Us? No, a whole bunch of knowledge bombs. Shovels of knowledge bombs. Hey, everybody, welcome to Monday on the Stacky Benjamin Show. I am Joe Salcy. Hi, Average Joe Money on Twitter. And we are all fired up for the week, man. Happy Monday, OG.
Happy Monday to you.
You know what makes Monday always happier?
Just a fresh cup of Joe.
That and a new sponsor on the show. Thanks to LegalZoom for supporting Stacky Benjamins. Go to LegalZoom.com today and get special savings when you enter SB at checkout. LegalZoom, where life meets legal. LegalZoom.com. And did you know, OG, that according to a 2016 Gallup poll, about 48% of all Americans don't own any stocks? That's ridiculous. That is crazy.
How are you supposed to make money?
Magic.
How's your money supposed to
Hello?
Make money?
Bitcoin. Hello.
Oh. Yeah, that's right.
M1 Finance is out to change that trend, though, and help everyone really be invested. They built an incredibly powerful and yet amazingly simple online investing tool. You can open an account with as little as $100. And you know what? Their platform is free. Automatic rebalancing into their portfolio pies. Customize it to your liking or use one of the professionally designed portfolios like they have over at those crazy robo-advisors. Much more flexibility. All on your terms. I use M1 Finance. Doesn't make it right for you. That's my little disclaimer. Head to stackybenjamins.com/M1Finance today for more. Use it on the web at M1 Finance or download the mobile app on iOS or Android. M1 Finance, be invested. We're invested in this week. We're going to set it off like a sailboat with a strong wind behind it, OG. Going to be a great week because we got some awesome headlines. Let's move.
Hello, darlings. And now, it's time for your favorite part of the show, our Stacking Benjamin's headlines.
Our first headline comes to us from Investment News. Here's a big headline for us older dudes.
I don't know who this us is that you're talking about.
Oh, you'll know this name, but some of our younger listeners might not know this name. At 81, emerging markets pioneer Mark Mobius is retiring. You see this?
Yeah, I did see that.
Mobius headed one of the first emerging markets equity funds available to U.S. customers. He's the bald-headed market guru who became one of the most recognized authorities on money-making opportunities in Africa, Asia, Eastern Europe, and Latin America. Plans to retire from Franklin Templeton Investments after 3 decades at the firm. I think it was because of Mobius that I really first got interested in emerging markets.
See, I don't know that it was him because I recognized when I read the story, I was like, oh, yeah, I recognize that guy. I've seen him at conferences or whatever, heard him speak. I just like the story. He said that he was at Franklin Templeton. I like the story of John Templeton.
Sir John Templeton, yeah.
Kind of the whole international investing to begin with. And so this, you know, this was obviously an offshoot. In emerging markets is kind of an offshoot of international. So I was more on the Templeton side of the story, I think, and just kind of left it there. But long storied career for sure, and got a lot of people interested in other areas that are nearly impossible to research unless you got boots on the ground. So
he says in this piece, though, quote, "It's not very complicated," which I think is him being a little bit humble. Listen to this. Mobius 81, who said he kept most of his own money in Templeton funds, made prescient calls on major market movements. He correctly predicted the start of a bull market that began in 2009, snapped up bargains during the Asian financial crisis after Thailand floated its currency in 97, bought Russian stocks as panic selling took hold in Russia in 1998. Also one of the first institutional investors to identify Africa as a promising frontier market, setting up the Templeton Africa Fund in 2012. My idea of a bargain is, by the way, not very complicated, he wrote in Passport to Profits, his 1999 book. I buy stocks and companies with good growth potential over a 5-year period. Bam.
It's that easy. Cool.
It's magic. Why don't we all just go do that?
Just buy stock in companies that have good growth potential.
Now, for most of us, trying to do that isn't a good idea, by the way.
Well, I mean, you can do it, right? We've had Phil Town on the show, and he's got a great system, if you will, for researching companies and their valuations and doing some calculations and that sort of thing. But I think what a fund company brings to the table, or an ETF brings to the table, is that instant diversification of thousands of different positions. And then more importantly, they can also layer on top of that the risk profile of each one of those companies. It's unlikely that you've got a big enough capital base that you can be well diversified with just, you know, a few individual stocks. Just think about the sheer volume of work it would be to try to research all of the companies. And then tomorrow, all of your research is wrong and you have to do it again.
Right.
You know,
right. Is emerging markets a place where you use a passive ETF, or is this still one of the holdouts where active investment makes sense?
I don't think that there's any areas that active investments don't make sense in some cases, but definitely if I was tilting the scale, I could see it being tilted toward some of this more esoteric international and emerging market stuff, because you really do need to have some presence there. And I think that's what some of those companies bring to the table is, you know, Templeton, for example, was the first fund company that set up offices in these faraway lands, so to speak, that gave them a kind of a leg up, and they were in the community so they could observe the behavior and that sort of thing. So can't go wrong with either. I think the biggest piece that people miss with emerging markets, they just don't invest in them. They don't know about it and they don't use it. You know, you've got to be diversified into it.
I agree. One of my favorite places to invest. Our second piece comes to us from Money. This stock indicator is right 84% of the time, says this headline. Now it says the market will keep climbing all year. Oh boy.
Yes.
Oh
yes.
Boy.
It's only right 84% of the time, but that's okay. 100% of the time, it's right 84% of the time.
This is written by Paul J. Lim. Says, after the first several trading days of the year, U.S. stocks are already up nearly 3%. Why is this important? Because history says that if equities post a gain in the first 5 trading days of the year, there's a very good chance the stock market will continue to rise for the whole year. In fact, the so-called first 5-day barometer, that's a thing.
Oh, the first 5. Oh, yeah, it's totally a thing.
Has been.
I just heard about it in this Money Magazine article. It's totally a thing.
Has been correct around 84% of the time. I think it's the one I'm quoting.
Then it's a thing.
Since 1950, according to the Stock Traders Almanac. It says, why these 5 days matter? Well, no one knows for sure why the first 5 days matter.
Of course they don't, because it doesn't matter, but go ahead.
Market watchers have their guesses. Of course they do.
See, this is really funny. So complete sidebar here. Would you go to the doctor? So you've got an infection, a sinus infection, and the doctor says, I need you to take this medicine. It works 84% of the time. People don't really know why it works, but we're pretty sure that it's going to work for you, because the last handful of people that walked in, I gave this to, and they didn't have any problems. We're not sure why it does what it does. No, science, you look at it and it says, oh no, we know why amoxicillin works, because it's a variant of penicillin, and penicillin attacks the illness in this way, rendering it unable to, you know, reproduce or whatever, right? So why is it any different with money? People have no idea why this works, but you should do it.
They start off quoting the Stock Traders Almanac, and it says, quote, it's the first month of the year. It's when everyone makes their assessment of the year to come. So it's a reflection of how investors are likely to behave for the year, says Jeffrey Hirsch. And guess what Jeffrey Hirsch's job is, OG?
He is a hedge fund manager.
No, he's the editor of the almanac that they're quoting.
obviously. Yeah.
So you go read it. Yeah.
I do kind of think that I can swallow that a little bit, right? You know, you get your bonuses and that sort of thing. And you're starting to think about deploying that money at the beginning of the year.
I can swallow that for the first quarter. I think by the end of the first quarter, we've forgotten about January and now we're on whatever the economic or new news or whatever the hell is the next thing. Yeah. I can't see us in October going in January, those first five days.
January, that looked pretty good there. So
yeah. Don't recall a year where I thought back and went,
I think about it this way. It's the middle of January. Do you remember your sensation about the market climate September 20th?
Right.
Of course you don't.
No, the 20th through the 25th.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Right.
How I felt those particular 5 days. Because, 84% of the time, those 5 days, pretty bad.
I wonder if you could use this just about in any period of time. But anyway, finish it up.
Well, what's the point here? Let's just cut to the chase here, because I think the point is I don't think we make predictions based on what the market's doing. Why am I looking at what the market's going to do this year? I want to know what the market's going to do in 10 years.
Is it really a big leap to say 84% of the time the stock market goes up when these things happen? When the stock market goes up, what, 70% of the time anyway? So I want to know, on the times that it didn't go up the 5 days, did it go down? Or were they up 70% of the time also? We're not looking for day-to-day stock recommendations here or prognostications, right? We're looking, like you said, 20 years down the line, 30 years down the line, and what January 3rd, 4th, 5th, 6th, and 7th trading days in 2018 really probably don't matter too much at all, as a matter of fact, in terms of what the market does in 2038.
Because you know what people do when they read this stuff.
Or by 2038.
Somebody reads this stuff, 2018 is going to be a good year, got to put my money in. And then the first sign that things are going awry, which even in a good year, things will go awry.
Yeah, except last year.
Except last year. Where everything was
we need a good cleanse, actually. JP Morgan says that on average, the stock market goes down 14.5% a year, intra year, right? Top to bottom. And last year, our volatility was -3.
Nothing, right?
I mean, nobody even remembers it happening. I think people are going to freak out if the market goes down like 10 or 12%. And by the way, that's not even average. Average is 14. So can you imagine if the market's down like 15% over the month of February? What's going to happen?
The sky is falling.
We need what's going to happen is we're going to get a good cleansing. A lot of stuff on sale.
Lesson number one, don't panic when things go on sale. And
skip to the supermarket with your bucket of money.
Lesson number two is emerging markets. Maybe you should have some of that in your portfolio too. Candace Marie is somebody I've gotten to know a little bit recently. Very excited to have her on the show because this woman has such a cool story that we asked her to come on and tell. She's paid over $39,000 off in debt. She is somebody who during that time did not have stable income. And she'll tell the story about, man, hustling. This is a great, great tale of hustling, making ends meet, and not only making them meet, but finding a way against all odds to get ahead.
Making it happen.
Candace Marie runs a great blog called Young Yet Wise, but she's not doing that today. She's down here with us in the basement. Say hello to Candace Marie. And coming down the stairs to the basement, joining us from youngyetwise.com, it's Candace Marie. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm so happy that you included us on your nationwide tour.
Yeah, I'm glad I brought a sweater. It's a little chilly down here.
It is. I know. And that's like the world's fluffiest sweater, too, that you're wearing. You look like, it seriously looks like something you'd take to bed or a nap or something.
Super cozy.
Yeah. So let's talk about you now, because you paid off how much money in debt just recently, but just before the end of the year?
Recently, I paid off $47,500 worth of debt.
Bam! How does that feel?
It feels amazing. Yeah, it feels good.
What's different for you today, now that you paid off that debt? Because today's going to be the story of you paying it off, which I think is phenomenal. But what's different for you today than before? Like, how is life different now that you don't have that hanging over your head?
You know, yesterday I was just looking over my budget and I saw like the minimum amount that usually goes towards my debt. And I'm like, oh, I can put this in like my savings or investing now.
But you know, it's funny. You know what most people do because you coach people with their money. They don't do that at all. Once they get the debt paid, they go buy crap.
Yeah. They're like splurging.
Yeah.
Spending everywhere else.
But not going to do that.
No.
No. So let's talk about the debt story. So your story begins, I think in college, right?
Yep. So I went to RIT and I studied new media design and imaging. And then I graduated there with $38,500 worth of student loan debt.
Okay.
So after I graduated, I thought life was going to be great. You know, it was going to be easy for me to find a job. It was going to take over the world. And I couldn't find a job. So I did what every other college student dreams of doing and had to move back home with my mom.
I want to go through all those things because I think, I mean, you're not the only person that has suffered that way after school. During college, how many interviews did you have?
You know, I feel like it was hard for me to focus on finishing school and applying for jobs at the same time.
Okay.
So I didn't have any interviews while I was at school.
Did them as soon as you got out thinking there's going to be a job?
Yep.
Yes.
And then nothing.
Nothing at all. That's got to be incredibly frustrating knowing that, I mean, it seems like you were a really good student too.
Yeah, it was really frustrating because I'm seeing everybody else like getting jobs and reading their Facebook statuses. And I'm like, oh, when is my job going to come?
Yeah, that doesn't build confidence. So you moved home. Let me ask you about that for a second. How tough is it to move back home?
It is tough because you go from having so much freedom and like no one asking you like, where are you going? What time are you coming back to? Okay, where are you going to go? What time are you going to be back in? So it's definitely different, an adjustment.
When was this, that this happened? Give us a sense of the time.
I graduated in 2011.
Okay. So how was that call to your mom? Because I can imagine you still remember that call saying, hey, mom, guess what? No job. I'm coming home.
Yeah, no, she was very welcoming. You know, my room was still there. She was like, sure, just come on home. There's enough room for you.
I totally agree with her, though. Working from your mom's basement, totally a great idea, Candace.
That's like wonderful.
The best idea ever. So what happened then? I mean, now you have all this debt. You have no job. What do you do? What's going on in your brain?
So now I'm just trying to figure out like what my next steps are going to be. You know, I'm trying to stay positive and every day I'm just like applying for jobs. So eventually I did get a job offer after like 6 months.
Awesome. And was it the job you expected?
No, it was not. So on the job interview, they were telling me that I was going to only be making $30,000 a year with no benefits. And that everyone here starts off making the same amount of money. Nobody's rolling here in a Porsche. That's what he told me.
You say that's what he told you. Are you saying there are actually people rolling in a Porsche, but not you?
Yeah, I think that's how I felt. That's just what he tells the people who are applying for jobs there.
Right. So you started this new job, $30,000, but it's a job. Were you able to start saving some of that money?
Yeah, I was able to start saving a little bit of money. And by that time, my student loans had been kicking in. So yeah, it was just like student loans, food, groceries.
Did your mom have you pay rent?
She did have me pay rent.
But obviously,
it was like a small amount. It wasn't like the Boston rent. You know, it was like $200 then.
I was going to say, not compared to going out and finding a place on your own.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So you get the job. Things are now looking up. And then what happened?
And then I ended up getting let go from that job as well.
How did that story turn out? I mean, does your boss just out of the blue say, hey, I need to talk to you?
Well, he let me work. It was like I was coming back from lunch and then he was just like, hey, we need to have a chat. And then I got there and they're like, actually, we have to let you go. There's not enough work for two designers here. So unfortunately, we're going to have to let you go.
Did you have that feeling ahead of time, like before that chat, that this might be coming?
No, I didn't know. But then it was kind of like, I feel like everybody else in the office knew except for me. There was only like 6 to 8 people that worked there, but I just felt like everybody knew.
Yeah. No, well, I would think so too. When I came out of that, you must have felt just completely frustrated.
It was frustrating. And I remember like riding the train back home and just thinking back to my college graduation where they made it seem like everything was going to be just fine. You know, like, oh, you're preparing for the real world. You're going to take it over. And I'm like, wow, I just lost my job. Now what?
Yeah. Now the real world's got you and has spit you out. So I'm guessing you went and looked for another job.
Yeah. So luckily I put a little bit of money into savings. So I had an emergency fund. And then I also just started freelancing while applying for jobs.
I think this freelancing part of your story is a key, isn't it? Because I mean, obviously as we go through, had you not started freelancing, you might not have the skills you have now to do whatever it takes.
Yeah, it's very true. I think everybody should start making money on the side of their 9-to-5.
Did you have clients in mind or did you start off with marketing? Like where did your freelancing begin?
Well, I was actually freelancing also in college, too. Okay. While I was taking classes, I was doing logos for people. I was doing websites. So those are kind of the skills that I, when I went to school for those skills already. So people were already approaching me to get help from them.
It's interesting because the stuff that you learned at school was, I mean, the stuff that you learned at school was the stuff that you were able to go do. Really, the, I'm guessing, how much did they teach you about running a business at school?
Yeah, nothing really. Not really too much about running a business.
So advertising for that, how did you find new clients?
I feel like it was just like a word of mouth referrals.
Okay.
That's how people were finding me up.
That's good. So your network.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Which is interesting because I think people think it's harder than it is to have this quote side hustle.
Yeah. I think that once you just start sharing with the world what you want to do, like that's when opportunities start coming to you.
Yeah. Yeah. So you're doing these new, we'll call them side gigs, but really it's doing whatever it takes to make some money come in. And then did you end up finding another job?
I did. I ended up finding another job at an ad agency. And this time they offered me $38,000.
Nice.
I was like, oh, this is better than the 30. And it came with benefits. So that
nice.
Was good.
That is good.
Signed up for the 401k program finally.
Did you keep paying your student loans while you were doing the jobs yourself? Or did you have to defer on those?
Oh, no, I had to defer my student loans.
Okay.
Until I had the new job at the ad agency.
Did you have any other debt too, Candace? Did you have, you know, credit card debt or anything like that?
Yeah, I did have credit card debt. So that was kind of like the first debt that I had to tackle once I got my 9-to-5.
Okay.
At the ad agency.
Was there something that you did that you can point to when you had a job that was a key to being able to pay down your debt? Was it saving automatically or, I mean, I don't know.
I think for me, it was kind of just figuring out like what my net worth actually was. I think that was the key because at first I had no idea, but then just seeing all like how much debt I had and how much I had in like my savings or investments was helpful for me.
Why would that be helpful? Because it was negative? I mean, because you saw this negative number and you're like, damn it, I don't want to have a negative number.
Yeah, I think that's what it was. It was seeing that it was in the negatives and I'm like, how can I get out of this? Right. What should I tackle first? Yeah.
Once again, proving it's not about spreadsheets. It's about determination. So I'm guessing this job was happily ever after with the ad agency.
Nope. Well, I was there for about almost 5 years.
Oh, that's good.
This last January, they decided to let me go.
And did that conversation go similarly?
They lost like a big account. So it wasn't just me this time. Okay. It was like a whole bunch of people at the agency.
And this time, was it easier to see the writing on the wall that it was once that account went, you're probably going bye-bye?
Yeah, I feel like an ad agency, it's always like that. You always just never know when it's going to come, you know. But the whole time, luckily, I had started my blog, my personal finance blog. And also, I was building up clients for different design and social media work on the side.
This is interesting, too. So did you just keep doing that all along?
Yep, all along.
Because I think that's important is that, I don't know, the second time you must have been a little, it sounds like you were a little cynical. Like, maybe this is the job. Maybe it's not.
Yeah, I was like, you know, two times and you're up. I'm like, you know what? I'm just banking on everybody else. Why don't I just bet on myself? So I decided to just work for myself now.
Did you ever take out any debt for your side hustle?
No, I didn't.
Which is also important. And by the time you lost your job, I'm assuming you must have had a machine running then in the background that you could just make your full-time machine.
Well, in last January, I still had like $10,000 worth of debt left to pay. And then That's when I got let go from my job. So I was just like, how am I going to pay this off? So again, somebody from my network reached out and it's a different ad agency. And they were like, would you mind freelancing here a few hours a week? So I was freelancing there as well as freelancing, doing my own clients and building up my personal finance blog. You know, I have a monthly membership. I was doing money coaching, finding any means necessary to pay off this debt.
So $10,000 left, 2017 hits. How did you pay off that last 10,000 bucks with not really consistent income?
You know, I just feel like that's what I just had to prioritize. Anytime money would come in, it would just go to the debt. So luckily I'm still at home at this point. So like I'm not paying thousands of dollars in rent, which is good. I don't have a car either. So I was making sacrifices that way.
But now it's interesting because I look at what's ahead for you. You've got this business, which is going well. We'll talk about your blog and about your coaching business here in a second. Do you still do design work?
Yeah, I still do design work.
And so you have these multiple streams of income that people talk about. And your your overhead now is what? Just the rent to mom?
Now it's like the rent, groceries, and like my business expenses. Yeah.
That's it. That's fantastic.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, so I think that's a key. Your cost to turn the lights on every day to get to work is very, very low. It is incredibly
very low.
Yeah, that's good. So what's next for you? Where do you see things go from here?
well, from here, I just want to continue to grow my business, you know, and keep being an entrepreneur, and then just like saving money, investing money, and just being able to travel.
Any place specifically?
Yeah, I don't have like a specific place that I want to go, but I definitely just want to be able to travel more.
Well, you can go places cold with that sweater. So,
yeah,
let's talk about your awesome blog and about the stuff that you do. Where'd you come up with the name Young Yet Wise? Because I think that's a awesome name for a blog.
Oh, you know, it just came to me because usually people think like young people don't make smart decisions. So I just kind of want to be different and be like, no, we're young, but we can still be wise. So,
and I notice it's not just you being young yet wise. It's you teaching other people to be young yet wise.
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah.
Young people and young at heart.
Right. All right. Great. Good point. And then you have your coaching business too. Tell me about that.
Yeah. So I offer one-on-one money coaching to help people just get a better plan for their money, as well as like a monthly membership that I have as well. So it's like monthly video lessons as well as like a group video calls.
When you see people with the money management, I mean, I know you're not going to give it all away, but let's talk about a couple of the things that people do that you're able to teach them. When it comes to like people not reaching their goals, what do you see some of the main problems are?
I think the main problems are like people don't really know where their money is going. You know, the first time when I'm sitting down with them to create their budgets, they're giving me like all these nice numbers. And then I'm like, okay, now let's look through your bank statements and credit card statements and let's get the real numbers. And there's always a little pushback like, I don't know, Candace, I don't really want to do this. But then we get to see the real amount of money that they're spending.
So you're not telling me people lie to you, are you? You're not saying that.
Of course not.
Lie to my money coach? Why would I do that?
Heck. Oh my gosh.
And then expense. I bet it's the usual places, shopping, eating out.
Yep. Shopping, eating out, alcohol, vacations.
Yeah. Isn't that funny? And so how do you fix that though? Besides saying don't shop so much.
I think just figuring out like what their lifetime goals are, like what's important to them.
Well, thanks for joining us. The site is Young Yet Wise. We will link to that in our show notes at stackybenjamins.com. What a great success story. Congratulations, Candace. This is awesome.
Thank you so much, Joe.
Hey there, trivia fans. I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug. And while I wait for Joe's mom's cookies to come out of the oven, thought I'd throw you a bone with today's trivia segment. Here's the deal. I'm waiting for cookies today, but at the end of the year, investors often wait for something called the Santa Claus Rally. What is it? I'll be back with the answer and hopefully some chocolate chips in just a moment.
What will your story be in 2018? Now that the holiday rush is over, LegalZoom can help you make this a memorable year before all the distractions take hold. Finally, get serious about launching and running your business. Square away your family's financial future with the right estate plan. You can do all this and more with LegalZoom. LegalZoom's been helping people like you take care of their dreams and responsibilities for more than 16 years. They're not a law firm, but they have the resources to keep you on the right path, including advice from their network of independent attorneys all at your fingertips. LegalZoom plugs right into your life so you can take care of the things that matter most. Go to LegalZoom.com today and get special savings when you enter SB at checkout. LegalZoom, where life meets legal. LegalZoom.com. I've talked about this stat before, but this is scary. According to a 2016 Gallup poll, 48% of all Americans don't own any stock. And I realize it can be daunting when it's time to start something new, but here's a great thing. Getting invested is more to do with taking baby steps than leaping headfirst into Wall Street. Here's Brian Barnes, founder of M1 Finance, on just how easy it is to be invested.
So you just either log on to the website or use the mobile application. We're native on Android and iOS, and it takes about 3 minutes, and your first $1,000 that you deposit is managed for free.
I'd love to say the free $1,000 is a special deal I made for you, but Brian and M1 Finance are that good to everybody. With M1, you can select from one of dozens of professionally designed portfolio pies, or you can customize it, as mom says, to your heart's content. Head to stackybenjamins.com/M1Finance for more. That's stackybenjamins.com, M1Finance.com for more. So just fire up their mobile app, M1 Finance, be invested.
Hey there, trivia fans. I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug, with some bad news and some good news. The bad news? Joe's mom said hands off her cookies. The good news? Not only will she let me borrow her Harley to get supplies for the next batch, I'm also going to give you the answer to today's trivia question, which was this. Investors at the end of the year wait for something called the Santa Claus Rally. What is it? If you answered that the Santa Claus Rally is the frequent uptick in the stock market in the last week of the year, you'd be correct. While experts disagree on the actual reasons for the rally, there are lots of theories, such as investors plopping money into retirement plans before the year end and people investing year-end bonuses. I, of course, have my own theory, which is that Santa Claus makes the market rise that week. Why else would they call it a Santa Claus rally, people? Joe's mom says that some folks just like to make things harder than they really are, and I think this is squarely a case in point. Now, off to grab some margarine squares and honey for the next cookie batch. See ya!
Big thanks to Candace Marie. Isn't that inspiring? Somebody who just says, you know what? I'm going
to
make it happen.
Get her done.
Gonna make it happen.
She just said, get her done.
I don't think Candace Marie said, get her done. Just
have like, this. Get her done.
I can't imagine that ever coming out.
G-I-T-E-R-D-U-N.
Can't get ever imagine that coming out of her mouth.
Hey, that's awesome story, though.
Hey, let's throw out David Lifeline to tackle some of life's, or rather life insurance's, most important questions. Our friends at Haven Life Insurance Agency, they're disrupting the life insurance industry by focusing on what you value most.
Emerging markets, baby.
And?
Oh, emerging markets.
And Thailand.
Okay.
And Russia. I don't know. I'm just thinking of emerging markets.
Yes.
No, it's your family and your time, but that was a nice try. They were the first life insurance startup that's also wholly owned by industry giant MassMutual to create a high quality, affordable term life insurance policy you can purchase entirely online. Qualified healthy applicants, they can even skip the medical exam. Head to stackybenjamins.com/Haven Life now to get a free quote and learn about life insurance the modern way. And up today on the Haven Lifeline, it's our new friend Ty. Say hello, Ty.
Hey, Joe and OG. I've been reading a lot about the new tax law and how it is going to increase the U.S. debt, but I think it was like $1.5 trillion. Why would they create a tax law that increases the debt, and why does it seem like no one cares about the increase in debt? Does it even matter that the country's debt is so big? Thanks, guys, and keep this a secret from everyone else, but I occasionally learn something from listening to the show.
Well, lucky for you, Ty, you're the only listener. We refer to Ty as the listener. So there's nobody but Ty who's even paying attention. So, we don't do politics on the Stacking Benjamin show, so we're not going to go there. But we can talk about the economic theory of why a tax break, OG, equals more money to solve deficit and debt problems.
I think some of it has to do with the short and intermediate term value that And I don't pay too much attention to this, frankly. So exactly who calculates it and why and who leaves things out and that sort of thing is beyond my realm of interest. But basically, it works like this. The theory behind a tax cut is you have a whole bunch of money that now people are not paying in taxes. And in theory, some of that money will be redeployed into the economy. And when that money is redeployed into the economy, that's going to add more service or add more supply or add more stuff to the economy. And therefore, it's going to mean that businesses are going to turn around and have to hire more people because we need to make more widgets because people are buying more widgets. And so it's kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy in that regard that I spend more money, therefore the businesses need to hire more people. Therefore, people make more money. That drives wage growth. This is the theory behind it. Anyways, and so obviously some people will not spend their tax cut, right? Some people are going to take their tax cut and invest it. Some people are going to pay down their debt, but they're counting on a lot of people spending it. And so while some calculations have this adding to the deficit, let's say by $1 trillion, for example, I think a lot of that is linear and not including the projected increase of the, you know, the production of the country, I guess, associated with that. And then there's also kind of the same reason that companies take on debt, kind of the time value money of it, right? Like, it's never good to have debt, except for the fact that if I can take $1 billion, if I'm Apple, to build a new factory and it's going to cost me $20 million a year of interest, but I can sell 100 million new iPhones. So you look at it and you go, why would I want to take on $1 billion of debt? It's never good, except now I'm going to take that debt and invest it and try to grow that money faster. And I think some of that's that concept as well. And then the third part of your question, does anybody care that there's a huge deficit? I think the answer to that is clearly no. I mean, not people that matter, I guess.
Well, that's true.
Nobody that has the ability to make an influence over changing it, I suppose.
Yeah, if you go past what people say and look at the actual actions, the answer is no.
But to be fair, is that much different than individual behavior? I mean, you can't run a deficit in your individual life for very long.
Well, and that's where I was hoping to take this conversation because, well, first, and just to put my little spin on this, is let's say that you have a stadium and you've got 10,000 people coming and you're charging them $25 to get in, let's say. You drop the price to $10 instead of $25 and four times the people come to your stadium, you're making more money. You fill more seats.
You hope that four times as many people.
Yeah. But let's say I'm saying if that happens, you end up making more money. You end up filling more seats. Those people buy concessions, right? You know, because the people that were coming before, instead of the fact that you charge them $25, you only charge them $10. You're hoping they're going to spend the extra $15 now on concessions. So they're going to spend it anyway. All that stuff. I mean, you look at businesses and how they do that. So that's I think on my end is the theory. The thing that we should look at is that's the government's hope, OG. So if you look at that, they're saying, we hope more people take this money and they spend it. On our end, I think we have to look at this as an opportunity. We've been handed back more of our own money. It's your chance. It's your chance to put that money in your pocket where you didn't have it as much of an opportunity before. So break that chain. Don't do what the government's hoping for. Obviously, we're all hoping because we're all on the ship together that it works.
We hope that there's a lot of people who do that, but just not our people.
Just not us. Right. Thanks for the question, Ty. If you need us to help you by throwing out the Haven Lifeline to you, head to stackybenjamins.com/vase mail. I don't know if you know what vase mail is. I have no idea what it is, but I said it. But it's where we hand you a vase. Actually, we're going to hand you one of these cool. Check out. I'm wearing one today. The cool greatest money show on earth t-shirt.
Am I the elephant in that?
Going out today.
Which one am I?
Did you eat a lot over the holidays? Is that the deal?
Mm-mm.
Yes, I'm the ringmaster.
So you say.
You can be the...
Since you're on a t-shirt, it must be true.
You're the... Of course. A t-shirt that we made. If I tell people enough times. Speaking of Washington, D.C. and politics, right?
Yeah. So free t-shirt for Ty coming downrange.
Doug also brings down the mail, and we have some mail from one of our favorite bloggers from the Freedom is Groovy blog, Mrs. Groovy. We had Mr. Groovy on earlier. We're going to have Mrs. Groovy on our roundtable.
Yes, please.
Sometime. That'd be great. She says, hey, Joe, OG, and Doug, the neighbors, wanted to say thank you for the episode with Tyler Schulte. Mr. Groovy and I are planning to build a small home on land we just purchased. Although our situation's not exactly the same as Taylor's, we can learn from his experience. And now we have a small arsenal of questions to ask our lawyer, such as what clauses should be in our contract with the builder? How do we confirm whether he has funds or has ever filed for bankruptcy or been sued? And at what point in the process should we be hiring our own inspector? I love his idea that if your house has a unique feature, to get a separate inspector specifically for that unique feature, because if that's the reason you're buying the house, like it's all hardwood floors, bring in a hardwood floor expert. Or if it's, you know, let's say that you're maybe putting a pool in behind your house or something. I don't know. Just making that up.
Hire your own inspector.
Yeah. Tyler Schulte was on the show back in December. For those people that missed it, Tyler had a monster court battle over multiple years with the builder, and just everything that could have gone wrong went wrong. And it ended up being a great story. And I'm glad people learned from it. Yeah. Although luckily it didn't learn from us, had to learn from our guest.
Exactly. Yeah. That's what I was going to say is that we have to bring in additional troops to actually have people learn something.
Right. Thanks for the note, Mrs. Groovy. If you've got a note for us, it's joe@stackybenjamins.com. Or you know what you do? Just head to stackybenjamins.com and questions for the show. Click on that. Obviously, we prefer you use the Haven Lifeline. And you prefer to use the Haven Lifeline because then we'll send you one of our awesome pieces of swag. Also, big thanks to everybody who's left a review of this show. Maybe one of my favorite reviews ever came to us from Jambalaya Jeremiah.
I like me some jambalaya.
Five stars, Despacito, it says. And when you see a review with the headline Despacito,
a little Justin Bieber, I like it.
You're okay. Like, what?
I'm in so far.
Jambalaya Jeremiah says, has anyone else noticed that Joe Saul Sehy has the same number of syllables as Despacito? You're welcome. This is the podcast that has stayed in my queue while others have faded away. Goofy, informative, and fun. Thanks for the great show, guys.
Bonus points if you can translate Joe, Saul Sehy, and Despacito and use them in the same sentence.
That's the next gauntlet we're throwing down.
You don't want to translate. It's just really awkward.
Just don't. Thanks for that review. And mom's putting that on the fridge for a few awkward days.
Maybe the cash snap dude can make a Snapchat story with Joe and Despacito in the background.
Our friend Greg, just crazy cash snap. Just awesome stuff he does over there. Hey, and if you have need a Despacito to help you with your financial planning.
It's not a person. It's an adjective or an adverb, actually.
That was a segue gone wrong. OG's taking clients.
You're gonna feel really bad when we turn the microphone off and I tell you what it really means.
I know what it really means.
Oh, okay.
I just look at how red my face is. It just, wow. OG's taking clients. Head to stackandbenjamins.com/OG, just the letters OG, and you'll see his calendar and you can see what it would take to get him in your corner. Coming up on Wednesday, see me just trying to get the hell out of here.
Yeah. Coming wrap up, it up. You're getting the wrap up single. You know, like, the hook's coming out from the side stage. Dun, 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 dun.
It's all going bad. Vincent Puglisi came down to the basement. He is a guy who's one of the top sports photographers. He goes to all the major sporting events, just awesome photography. And he was just a financial knucklehead and is going to tell us a story of his life and going from kind of being chained to the paycheck, like most people, to financial freedom, able to do whatever the heck he wants, whenever he wants. He and his spouse, Elizabeth, stopped by the basement, and Vincent and I set up the card table here, OG, and recorded an interview. So it was really fun. Thanks. We'll see him on Wednesday. We'll see all of you back here on Wednesday. Go Stacks and Benjamins. Bye-bye.
Hey, OG, don't think I didn't see you stealing some of Mom's cookies. You and I are going to have words, buddy. We are going to have words.
But before we do, I'll tell everybody what they should have learned today. First, take some inspiration from Candace Marie. Even if you've got to fight to find your next job, keep digging and getting out of debt. Paying off your loans isn't an extra task. By focusing on it, you too can pay off lots of debt in a hurry. Second, stock market predictions? Leave those for the water cooler. In your portfolio, focus on the long term and don't get distracted by tea leaves or crystal ball predictions. But the big lesson? Don't ask to borrow Joe's mom's Harley unless you got the right gear. I don't own any Ray-Bans or a leather jacket, so guess it's time to grab the Schwinn and head to town. I got the perfect gear for that. Sweatpants and moon boots. Man, am I going to look sweet. The perfect look for winter bicycling. Special thanks to Candace Marie for joining us today. You'll find more on her site at youngyetwise.com. When you're done messing around with us, who do you want to teach you some money tricks? That nerd who talks over your head or your favorite basement-based geeks? Kathleen Selmans operates our Stacking Benjamins classroom, and to make up for the fact that we don't teach you anything here on the show, she's created a whole lot of tools you'll absolutely love. Head to learn.stackingbenjamins.com for details. And use coupon code DOUGROCKS for 10% off. Yeah, you're welcome. This show was created by Joe Saul Sehy, produced by Richie Rutter Reese, and engineered by the amazing Steve Stewart. Online, visit us on Twitter at SBenjaminsCast or on our Facebook page. Shannon Cowan is our community manager and social media guru. I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug, and I'm pretty much the guy in charge of everything around here. Trust me, this well-oiled machine didn't get like this all by itself. SB Podcasts may receive payment on the show from sponsors and guests in the form of books, giveaway items, discounts, or other remuneration.
There's no way you would take advice from these dorks, but like Joe's mom always says, don't take advice from people you don't know. This show is for entertainment purposes only, and before making any financial moves, consult with a real financial advisor.
Welcome to the after show. It's about time you started using your movie pass, man.
Yeah, I know. I was just talking to somebody about that. You know, you were talking about how it makes you feel like you can go to the movies and kind of throw one away, right? You can go like, I'll go see that. And if it sucks, it's cool because it didn't cost me any money.
Right.
Right. I literally this week was like, oh, I should probably go use my movie pass. And so for me, it's turned into like a chore. Or like a gym membership.
Getting your money's worth. A gym membership, yeah, right?
Where I'm like, I got to get my movie pass out of the drawer and go sit in a theater and watch something.
But you get there and it's fun.
Yeah, which I have a super funny story about all this. So I went and saw Molly's Game, but I went on Monday at 11 in the morning, which apparently at the theater near me is also Gray Hair Special Day.
Oh, good.
Or Blue Hair Special Day, whatever you want to call it. It's been a long time since I've been in a movie theater during the day with people in it. Usually when I go, it's kind of empty and I like it that way. But it was pretty full. The theater was pretty full. So I ended up actually sitting like next to somebody. There wasn't three seats where I could like sit with space on either side. So I ended up sitting next to somebody. And this theater is full of like super old people who talk throughout the entire movie like they're observing what's going on to one another, which is so funny. It doesn't bother me, but it's funny. And the previews especially, because you know it's like loud and then it's quiet, but then you know the sound, and then everybody's still finishing up talking. It's like just kind of this low hush, you can't hear it, and then the sound stops. It's like, and then I thought the movie So it's kind of funny.
I had that. I saw that movie, the John Hamm movie, where he's the baseball agent and he's trying to teach the Indian cricket players. Remember that movie a couple of years ago? Million Dollar Arm was the name of it. You know, we always go in on Tuesday afternoons, which is the same thing. We're generally the only people under probably age 75 at most movies we go see. But we had these people sitting right behind us, and Lake Bell, great actor. You've seen her in a lot of different stuff. She plays his love interest. And the woman behind us, the entire movie, I don't think she's that attractive. Like, the woman sounded like she smoked like 50 Marlboros a day. I don't think she's that pretty. Do you think she's pretty? And the guy's like, she's not that pretty. I don't think she's very pretty. They could have found somebody way prettier than her. She was
adding commentary to the entire movie.
But it's sexist commentary, right? They're not saying, oh, John Hamm, he's a looker. it's just all about how the woman, not about whether she can act or not. She's not that pretty. Why is he going for her? He should choose a nicer girl. He should look for a girl that's way. Look, it was so bad.
Like, she probably doesn't even go to church. Right. So this is going on, and this is during the trailer stuff. And the trailers, of course, are the stuff coming up. Kind of garbage, right? Like the stuff that's coming out in a little while, not very high quality stuff, right? Like you're watching it going, yeah, okay. So basically from March through May, I won't be seeing any movies. Or they're just like just cheap popcorn, you know, blow them up flicks, which I will see those. But anyway, so at the end of every trailer, there's like the, you can hear the rumbling of like, that looks stupid, right? So imagine a theater full of 75, 80 year old people. Here comes the trailer of all trailers coming out Valentine's Day.
Oh, yeah.
50 Shades of Grey, episode 47 million or whatever the hell they're on.
I've seen this trailer 87 times.
So it's awkward, first of all, right? Like just being in a room with someone else watching it, you feel like you need to take a bath. But now being in a room with like a whole bunch of like old people. It's so the end of the trailer. I'm going to ruin it for you if you haven't seen it yet. It's like, you know, they try to make it seem like it's, you know, not exciting, but thrilling, right? So it's like the scene, you know, they show like a clip of a scene and then they flash a word. And it's so it's basically like the.
No, I know exactly what it is. It's
so it's, I know what it says. Okay. Wait. Four. The. Climax. And it shows the gal in a little compromising position, you know, play on words there, if you know what I'm saying. And the whole theater gasps like, oh my God, this is ridiculous. It's the trailer. And I'm sitting there going, this is so funny. This is better than whatever movie I'm going to watch. We should just like film old people watching, you know, inappropriate videos. Anyways, they do that on YouTube. So Molly's game, hit it.
I'm Molly Bloom. Do you know about me?
I read your indictment after I got your call last night and I brought your book.
Do you understand that you are charged with operating an illegal gambling business?
Are you taking me on as a client?
I don't think I can convince my partners to take a flyer on the poke princess.
If you think a princess can do what I did, you're incorrect. I'm getting that you don't think much of me, but what if every single one of your ill-informed, unsophisticated opinions about me were wrong?
I'd be amazed.
This is a true story, but except for my own, I've changed all the names.
And Molly, my weekly poker game is moving to the Cobra Lounge. You'll help run it.
She's going to help run a poker game in this movie. This is written and directed, directorial debut by Aaron Sorkin.
Aaron Sorkin, yeah.
So who is famous for those people who don't know Aaron Sorkin, The West Wing was one, Sports Night.
Moneyball.
Yeah, the Facebook movie.
So Jessica Chastain, Idris Elba, the main characters. Also, you have Michael Cera, kind of plays a quasi-important role in this movie. Basically, the long and the short of it is that she's taken a little time off after her. She has a little bit of an incident at the very beginning of the movie. She takes some time off before going to law school. So she gets a job in L.A. as an assistant to this fella. And he says, hey, I've got the poker game. You're going to come help me do it. And so at the end of the first poker game, he says, as they're packing up, he says, tip Molly if you want to get invited to next week's game. And so she makes like $3,500, right? Which is more than what he's paying her just to be his assistant, $400 a week or whatever. So eventually it gets to the point where she sets up her own poker game and she kind of does it really high class, but she's really particular about not breaking the rules. Mostly. Things go awry. Things get out of control. She ends up doing the game in New York and LA. She's going between the cities. She's running poker games with $250,000 buy-ins, all this sort of stuff. And so it's telling the story while she's kind of under investigation during this indictment and she's going to court. So she's kind of backtracking and filling in the blanks. And there's a lot of missing pieces, some family dynamic stuff that you learn as time goes on. And it kind of ends weird, a little weird ending, takes a turn that you don't expect. But overall, well, pretty gosh darn good story. I'm going to give it 2 thumbs up. Super fun story to listen to. I don't know if it was, it says it was based on the book, but I don't know if the book is based on anything, if it's just a book.
Well, she says, I mean, they say it's a true story.
It doesn't say based on it. Usually at the beginning of the movie, it'll say, you know, based on the events of a true story. So it doesn't,
but she
says it's based on a book.
Oh, well, yeah, I guess the character says it's a true story, but I don't know if that accounts
true
for
story
anything
within the story type of thing. Yeah. But anyways, definitely worth seeing.
Aaron Sorkin is a guy that
twice, as a matter of fact, I'll watch it again when it comes out.
Even in the trailers, I can hear Aaron Sorkin's writing, just the witty back and forth writing. Like his writing is so identifiable from the beginning, and I love it. I just absolutely love the back and forth that they have.
He does Billions too, which is that Showtime special that I like, series that's coming out, third season in March.
And just a lot of witty back and forth.
Yeah, just back and forth. Yep. Yeah. The whole movie's like that. A lot of under your breath type of dialogue where, you know, you're hearing what she's thinking or she's retelling the story
from
like a third party while the scene's going on, you know? like, and then Johnny walked in, and then Johnny walks in type of thing.
Richie and I, our producer, we're always trying to study our craft. And so we study, and we're studying all the time. But one of the things we're doing now that you already know about, but listeners don't, is we're doing this Aaron Sorkin masterclass about story arc and better, more crisp writing. But have you heard some of the knocks on him from other people about how even on like the West Wing, when he was there, he would hire a team of writers because the studio would tell him he had to, and he wouldn't let him do anything.
No, I didn't.
He would tell them all, yeah, you're not touching this. This is all me, because he's got this certain style and other people try to replicate it. Like after he left the West Wing, you could totally see it change from being this character driven show about what's going on in their head to the things that are happening in the White House that frankly, it turned out viewers didn't really care about as much as who the people were. So yeah.
great movie. Love it.
Good,
go see it.
Good stuff. I've got about 20 other movies that I've seen too. So awesome. 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 Can't wait to see it. It's not out here locally. In fact, it just came to the little artsy theater in Shreveport, so I could drive 90 minutes to see it, but I think I'll wait because it's probably hitting wide release here pretty soon. I can't wait for that, and I can't wait for The Post. Excited to see The Post also.
Post is supposed to be pretty good. I got to see the Churchill one.
Yeah. I saw that one, The Shape of Water. Can't wait to do my reviews on those. Hopefully you've seen one or maybe several of those, and we can talk about them at the same time. All right. Go Stacks and Benjamins, everybody.